The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Practical spirituality. Positive messages. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Discover hope and healing from the other side. Welcome to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesman.
Listen, they're all around you, close as a thought or a memory.
Messages of Hope.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's been an unusual day for us. We're traveling on the road again. And like when, during our summer trips, we just arrived at the campground 10 minutes ago. So I'm catching my breath while Ty sets up the RV. But I have been preparing all day for this show, looking at the notes all week, but really, really just making sure that we get the most out of this hour. I could talk to my guest, Kelly Buckley, for hours on end. There's so many beautiful points I know she has to share with all of you about gratitude and resilience in the face of grief. Kelly is a shining light parent. That's our term for that replaces the term bereaved parent. She surely knows that her son Stephen is still the shining light in her life. She's the author of two books already, and the one we're going to be focusing on today is Just One Little Thing. And I look forward to Kelly sharing with you what that's all about. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to chat with you today.
Well, I was so excited when I found out that you're from Newfoundland, or as they say up there, Newfoundland. So right away, you know, I know a little more than most people about Newfoundland.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, Ty and I sailed there on our very first year as full-time cruisers on our sailboat. And to this day, having sailed across the Atlantic and around the Mediterranean, Newfoundland was one of our favorite ports because it was, number one, so beautiful, and number two, the people so friendly. So I love that. But you say that Newfoundlanders are resilient, and we'll talk more about that. But, we'll get to that later. I'd like you to just tell us about the biggest test of your resilience, because that's the basis of the show today.
I'll begin by starting at the beginning of Stephen's life. I actually had a twin pregnancy, identical twins, Stephen and his brother Matthew. And Matthew died at birth, and then Stephen died 23 years later on the 4th of July, 2009. On that day, we were actually visiting my husband Brady's parents, and he was with his friends. They were swimming and having fun, and we got a call. I think it was probably 6:30 in the evening, to say that he had gone missing at Jordan Lake. And I know that you know when you get that message. And you try to comprehend the reality of what's happening, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And everything changed in our lives at that moment. I remember the police officer, who was at the park ranger, said, you know, you need to prepare yourself. We are searching for him, but you need to prepare yourself. And there's just no preparing for that.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So we left. We were in Kentucky, and we left, and we drove through the night to Jordan Lake, North Carolina, and got there just at the break of dawn. And they resumed the search in the morning, and then found Stephen. And that's, you know, that is kind of the, you know, that moment where everything was changed going forward.
And yet, reading your book, my jaw dropped when I read the sign from the universe that let you know, even on that horrific drive all night long, that something greater was going on. Would you share about the card that was traveling at night with you?
So, and it's funny because sometimes I reread that because it seems unbelievable to me too.
Mm-hmm.
When we left that night, and we were driving, we could see the fireworks off of the interstate in the communities as we drove past. And Stephen had borrowed my car, and so he had one of his favorite CDs. And my husband and I chat a lot about everything. So we were talking, and I hadn't turned on the radio when we were driving up because we were chatting. And I turned on the radio just for distraction, and his favorite music started to play. And it was like he was in the car with us. And as we continued to drive, there was a car on the road with us, and the license plate, it was one of those vanity plates, and it was One Lifetime. And the significance of that was Stephen's first week at college, he actually got a tattoo that said One Lifetime. Now, as his mother, I wasn't thrilled. I was not thrilled when he got that tattoo, and he could see it on my face. But now that I think back on that, One Lifetime was truly how he lived each and every day, and it was really fitting for him. But all of those little things together throughout that drive, I just felt that he was right in the car with us.
And, when you travel long distances like we just did today, but you're in the middle of the night, not too many cars on the highway, and you just kept passing each other, and over, you're looking at this license plate that has the exact same words as the tattoo on that your son has. You're traveling and not knowing what's going on, you just know that he's gone missing in this lake. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that got me was when you got to the lake, they hadn't found him. They'd called off the search because it was dark. They're going to resume in the morning. And tell us about looking out at the water.
So I immediately wanted to go to the cove where we knew they were. And Stephen had such a great group of friends. So we went there, and my husband went to speak with the search crews, and I was with my wonder dog, Rudy, and I know that you had a wonder dog, Rudy, as well.
Yeah.
And Rudy and I were sitting on a bump in the sand, and we were just looking out over the water, and the water was like a mirror. It was, and I was negotiating with God and asking him to take me and have them find Stephen somewhere on the shore, injured and beat up, but alive. And there was a little spot out on the water, and I just knew that's where, I just knew that's where he was. And what's really strange is Rudy knew as well. Rudy was, it's hard for me to put into words what that morning was like.
Is where they found him, in that spot that you were drawn to, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like you said, the mother knows, is that connection that can't be broken. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but just to show this big web, I read that part of your book last week, got started, and something, the voice in me said, go read this other novel, take a break, this is heavy stuff. And so I picked up a novel just to start it, one that I'd had on my shelf for years, and it just jumped out at me. And Kelly, do you know that it started with this little girl who was a twin, and at childbirth, her twin died. And in the next scene, she's sitting at the dinner table, and an ambulance goes by, and she just knows that a young boy in the neighborhood has drowned in the lake. boom, boom. The two things that I've just read about in your book, then I get back to your book and you're talking about Rudy the Wonder Dog. And I just thought, look at the timing of this show. It's
wow.
It's phenomenal. It's because your message is so important. I don't know if you know that our Rudy just passed 10 days ago.
I'm so sorry.
The timing, you know, just when I'm, you know, going through just this little bit of grief compared to what you went through with your son, you did such a beautiful job in your book of sharing what it's like, the numbness and all of that. But go back now, if you would, and tell us about resilience and how you grew up with that, how that instilled, growing up in Newfoundland, instilled that in you. And what is resilience to you?
Well, I mean, I grew up on an island in the North Atlantic. The weather is not lovely all the time. the winters are harsh. You know, when I was growing up, that was, you know, it wasn't a really wealthy province in Canada. We always had exactly what we needed, and there was always enough love to go around. But I always watched my parents and my family and my friends and just people in general just make the best of situations. You know, they found a way to be happy, whether it be through music or jokes, or, you know, Newfoundlanders have a very unique way of looking at life.
I mean, you just reminded me, that was the one we to this day, Ty and I joke, we say this phrase that we learned there. It rained so much when we were there, and it was just this gray drizzle all the time. And you would pass people in Newfoundland in these outports where there were no roads to them at all, and they'd look at you and they would greet you this way: beautiful day.
That's so true, because if you had to wait for the sunshine, you'd never say it.
Yeah, it's true. So now you're going through the worst. I'm sorry.
So truly, growing up there and seeing my family, my friends, that I call that the roots of my resilience. That's where I think I really, you know, received my lessons in how to approach life and how to look at hardship.
So did you recognize that immediately after Stephen passed, or how did this urge to help others as a result of his passing come about?
I mean, to be honest, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have a plan. I didn't know what I was doing. I was relying on, I call it God's whisper in my ear. And I've always been a person, and I know, you know, you have a background in the military and I have a background in healthcare. So I was a nurse, and then I was in healthcare management for a lot of years. So I was always a person who was very solution focused, very evidence-based. Data was a big part of my existence. And so I always had a plan A, B, C, D. I always was kind of, I had it figured out. And if something went wrong, then I was the person who would figure out another way around. And that was honestly, and I've had a lot of things happen to me in my life, that was the first time that I can honestly say I had nothing. I remember sitting there on the sand and I had nothing. I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how I'm going to, I don't know how I'm going to survive this. And so there was no plan and there was no wisdom. I can't take credit for that. I just said, look, God, if, when I realized negotiations were not going well, I said, you're going to have to help me here because I don't know what to do. And immediately I knew that I had to start looking for gratitude. And it was something that just popped in my head immediately. I can't explain why. So thankful I listened because it saved me. I'm not sure where I would be if I didn't listen. But that's how it evolved. It just, I decided to listen.
Well, I want to just tell everybody that the little secret I've been keeping here is that Kelly is more than just an author and more than just a resilient person. That question, that request she put out there to God that day with no plan whatsoever resulted in her books and the one called Just One Little Thing. She started a movement of gratitude. Your Facebook page, Just One Little Thing, has over 130,000 followers. So
it does.
That's what we call ripples, the ripple effect. So
yeah.
Take us from no plan, hopeless, what do I do, God, to a movement.
So from me listening to that whisper, I first started to write about gratitude in the parking lot of the funeral home. On the back of a cable bill that I had in my purse. And I know people will think that I'm crazy. How can you find gratitude on the day that they find your son in a lake? But it was remarkable what I found. I was thankful for the divers who have the most difficult job. And they allowed me to bring my son home. And not everybody gets to do that. I was thankful for one of my son's best friends. His mom was there with us at the lake and brought water and chairs. And I mean, just beautiful people surrounded us. And she hugged me, and she hugged just like my mother. You know, one of those hugs where you feel like, you know, maybe you're innards are going to be squeezed out because they hug so tight. My mother was that kind of hugger. She just really let you know she loved you. And this woman gave me this hug, and it was like a hug from heaven. And just when I needed it, I needed my mom. And so it started there. So I started writing, and I just continued it. And for first starting out, it was just, I don't know. I guess I didn't know what else to do, so I just kept writing. And then it became sort of I had to do it. And then it evolved. And then I said, I need to share this with people. I need to share what I'm doing. And so, and again, it was not a well thought out plan. I just kind of went with the flow of it. As it meandered and changed and evolved, I changed with it. And that was a beautiful experience. And sometimes I feel challenged now, being further away from that rawness of grief, that you kind of tend to want to have more control over your life, you know, that personhood, mm-hmm. that ego-based control, whereas back then I didn't. And so I just followed it. So I started to write, and I put out Gratitude and Grief, the first book. And then I decided that I was going to start this Facebook group. So I like to do something positive on the 4th of July to remember Stephen. So it was launched on the 4th of July, I think 2011. And initially it was just me, and I told my husband to get a Facebook account because I couldn't be there by myself. Then I called my sisters, and I was like, don't let me be in here alone. Come join. And our friends and family, and people just started to show up. And some of the stories that people share, not just with me, but with each other, that's what I find beautiful about it, is when I step away and people connect with each other. That's the beauty of Jolt.
Jolt being, you know, just one little thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So
and you call them Jolters.
I do. I call them my Jolt family. So, I consider them to be family. I do.
Well, I have a Facebook page, a separate one with where people put what they're grateful for this day. But yours is so much different than that. And it's like your book, Just One Little Thing. It's not Pollyanna. It's not, oh, just be grateful for one thing and you're going to have this beautiful day. Describe the underlying feeling that what you feel draws people to this.
I think there's a lot of talk out there about how you can have a happy life in 10 easy steps. Or, you know, there's a lot of instant gratification in this world, right? Or we'd like to think there is. And basically what I've been quite upfront about is that you can't fix your life all at once. And if you lose somebody, you lose a child, you lose a husband, you know, you lose someone that you love dearly, you lose a dog that was like family, you're not going to heal that wound overnight. And so I'm not asking you to, I'm just asking you to find one little thing today. And so on the good days, it can be, you know, you laughed with your friends or you had a good outing or you went on a nice hike. But on the bad days, I explained to a lot of jolters, I'm not afraid to say that I was thankful today that my broken heart continued to beat. And that was the only thing I could find today.
Or the one that jumped out at me, you were thankful that you had sunglasses because they hid your red tear-filled eyes. You know, it's a little bittersweet, but you were still, you stuck to it.
And
it provided little miracles.
Well, it allowed me to tether myself to the present moment, right? So by looking for one little thing, it allowed me for 1 minute to be right here, right now. And right here, right now, I was okay. So I wasn't lamenting about the past or unfinished business or things that I wish I had said to Stephen, or I wasn't lamenting about the future of holidays that he wouldn't be here with us. I was right here, right now. And just for that moment, I was okay. And we did this as a family because we were all trying to figure it out. And I think that anybody who says, you know, oh, yes, this is the way to do it. You know, in my experience, there is no right or wrong way. There's just the way that you find through that provides you with peace. And this worked for us. And, you know, I think it has worked for others who I've talked to. But it allowed us to tether ourselves, as well as we linked those things together as each day passed. And so then we could look back and we could say, okay, if we made it through that day, then we can make it through this day. So it gave us the strength to go on. And it also, I think for my younger son, Brendan, who was 11 at the time, it also allowed us, I think, to normalize grief. You know, it allowed us to have conversations about tears. I described to him that when I would cry, which was a lot, I couldn't hide it from him because he would never see me. I didn't cry in front of him all the time, but I couldn't hide it 24/7. And so I said, you know, when you see Mom cry, it's nothing to be afraid of. We're just letting steam off. I'm just letting steam off my grief kettle. And then it kind of became, he'd walk into the kitchen and I'd have tears in my eyes and he'd say, steam off your grief kettle. And I'd say, yep. And he'd go on with his day. We normalized. So I guess it just allowed us to be open with each other is probably another thing that I'm very, very thankful for my family, that it allowed us to stick together.
It's beautiful. Your book is so beautifully written, the Just One Little Thing book that I'm focusing on today. You've taken your journal entries or your writing from specific days and shared what you're thankful for, but it's each day is different. And when you put that little line in there, and so I'm grateful for this, it touches you because it's different every time. It's not this Pollyanna gratitude. It shows the readers a new way of looking at everything.
Oh, I so appreciate that. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah. And the one thing I noticed was you said at the beginning of the show here, well, I didn't know anything. I wasn't that wise. And one note that I wrote is this book is jam-packed with wisdom. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Oh, well, I often say that I think I was just the scribe. I was just writing it for somebody else.
I want to talk after the break that's coming up here shortly about how you started each day with 10 minutes of, well, we'll talk about what those 10 minutes were filled with and how that changed your life. I also want to talk about, you had a reading with me and how Stephen came through, because we do love to show that Stephen and all our loved ones who pass are still here, and how you continue to sense his presence, how he's been with you throughout the journey. So we're coming up to a break here, but I hope you'll come back and join us, everybody. We're talking with Kelly Buckley, who started the Just One Little Thing movement, is what I'm calling it. And we're talking about how gratitude and resilience can help you in your grief journey. So come on back after the break.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back. You're listening to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesemann.
We've been talking with Kelly Buckley, whose son Stephen passed, and as a result of that, Kelly discovered a way to move through her grief. I love in your book, Just One Little Thing, you say that the focus of your writing shifted day by day. You started out writing about death and grief. And how did it shift, Kelly?
Well, I think initially all I could see was the grief. But again, as I started to look for, you know, the one little thing each day, and as I started to process some of the pain, I was able to see some of the blessings, and I guess the magic in life. There was things, I think, because I was open to it, and because I was open to see the love and the goodness that was still around me, I feel that life presented me with all of this information that showed me that Stephen was still with me. So,
yeah, and I want to talk about that. So before I get to that, just to say, you actually wrote, you started out writing about death and grief, and you ended up writing about life and living. I loved that phrase. And you do. You have so much good advice on living, including one section, the entry for June 27th. If you knew you had 1 week to live, you include an instruction manual for your life. What would you do if you only had one? If God let you know, okay, you have 1 week left. What are you going to do in that final week? It's brilliant. We all need to think that way. So tell me about Stephen. Share with everybody what Stephen was like.
So Stephen was, he was one of those children who you really couldn't take credit for. He was just a really good boy. He just had this personality that people gravitated towards him. And he didn't like to be the center of attention. That wasn't him at all. He liked to kind of stand at the edge and see who needed him. So Stephen was the guy who was always bringing home someone who needed something, right? So yeah. There was always someone sleeping on our couch, or he was a good friend. He was a good listener. He was a fantastic son. I had Stephen when I was a teenager, and so we grew up together. And he, you know, I often said that he was, you know, he was just so wise. And so he just taught me so much about life.
Well, I know he's been teaching you from across the veil, because the wisdom in your book is truly stunning. As I read it, I kept thinking, everybody needs to read this. This whole book is a manual for living. And talk about feeling his presence throughout the year that you wrote the book.
I would just feel him when I was writing, and Rudy would sit on my feet in my office when I would write, because it was an emotional experience. So Rudy was like my therapy dog, and would sit with me when I was writing. And, I could just feel Stephen there. I had a picture of him on the wall right across from my desk, and I would look up and I would kind of chat with him about things. I just felt him in my heart. In that first year, I remember dreaming about him. I would have this dream that he was a hockey goalie, and so he would be on the ice and I would be watching him from on the other side of the glass, and he would come over and try to talk to me, but I couldn't hear what he was trying to say to me. And then I would wake up, and then I would get up the next morning and, you know, write for hours. And I would think, well, maybe that's what you were trying to say to me. Hmm. Maybe, you know, I just had so many moments where, you know, butterflies surrounding our life. At the memorial at NC State University, my husband was up speaking, and there was a white butterfly that circled him the entire time he was speaking.
It's amazing. I never get tired of these stories. I never cease to be amazed. You don't talk about too many paranormal experiences in the book. That's not the focus of it. But what was it? A challenge for you to seek out a medium? Did you go to several? All I know is that I remember giving you a reading.
I never really, at first I was a bit fearful, because I suppose I was afraid that, you know, there's always certain people who would take advantage of the pain of others. And so, you know, you would be fearful that you might find the wrong person. And so I didn't know how to find the right person. And actually, I was at a writing workshop with Wayne Dyer, and I met a woman there in the lunch line, of all things. And we just, right out of the blue, I said, well, why don't we sit together for lunch? And she said, I'm so sorry, but there's somebody here who really needs to speak with you. And she started talking to me about Stephen, and she's a beautiful, beautiful person who gave me so much comfort that day, but I was in a heap on the floor.
I guess that's what a beautiful moment and a setup from Stephen, no doubt.
It was quite something, but And after that, I guess I was a little more open, and I read some about you, and I think because of your background and relating it to my kind of evidence-based background, I wanted to talk to you. And I was so glad that I did.
We don't need to get into it today, but I know that you said that he brought through some good evidence, so that's always what we look for. But let's get back to your... What's that?
He absolutely did. But the other thing when I remember when we chatted is that you described my mother to a T.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you really did. You described her beautiful, beautiful soul to a T. It was just lovely. And I had such a beautiful feeling in my heart after we spoke. So I would recommend for anybody who's just looking for that peace to seek that out, and because it makes
doubt.
A huge difference. Yeah,
absolutely. But the beautiful thing about your book is you showed your way of accessing wisdom that you didn't know you had. Would you tell us about how you began your day with those special 10 minutes?
I'm not sure which part you're referring to.
You haven't read your own book in a while. I remember this when I went back to my own book when I was reading it for an audible. You know, you said that for the first time in your life, you thought you knew yourself, but you would lie in bed for 10 minutes each day. And you got to know yourself better.
Yeah. I don't think I had really even contemplated who I really was prior to that. You know, I remember the first couple of months after Stephen died, and he had this bag with him, had the Constitution in it. He had at the lake that day, he had a copy of the Constitution, which I just thought was the sweetest thing. I thought that was, and that was Stephen. And I would lie in bed, and then I would sit on the edge of the bed, and I would stare at that bag and kind of review my life and where I had been up to that point and where I wanted to go from there.
Yeah, you wrote about feeling that until his passing, your life was on automatic. There were things you took for granted, and you really spent that time contemplating life. And so few do that.
Well, if losing Stephen didn't make me take stock of things, what would? You know, I sat there and I was like, okay. And then there was just too many things happening as well. We went to Canada. This is, I'll make this quick, but we went to Canada, and all of these connections, not only the butterflies, not only the people we would connect with, we would find people who needed love. So we are crossing the border from Canada back into Maine. We're driving back home from Newfoundland from our summer. And the border patrol agent came and was asking what was in the vehicle and stuff. And for some reason, I always get nervous when we're crossing the border, even though I'm straight arrow.
Nothing to hide.
Nothing to hide. But I always like have this deer in the headlights look. I don't know. It's crazy. So this woman is asking what we have in the car. And my husband's explaining. And she asks what I do for a living. And my husband said she's a writer. And she said, well, what do you write? And my husband said, well, she writes about grief. And the woman started to cry. And she said, lost my son a couple of months ago.
Oh, my gosh.
And so then my son in the back seat hands up one of my books.
Oh, my gosh.
This is like a family affair at this point. And so then we give her the book. And then by the time I get from Maine back to North Carolina, she's read the book and she's emailed me. And we were... And we all just kind of look at each other and say, well, we were meant to go to that border crossing. We were meant to see her today. And so the most beautiful thing about life now is that I believe there are no coincidences. I go with it. If something like that happens, I embrace it. I say, thank you, God and Stephen. And we keep going. That's what we're here to do. To spread love, to spread Stephen's ripple, I call it.
Beautiful. I love that your book it's not all love and life. You start, you know, most books, they start off with the grief, and then now I'm going to have gratitude every day, and you're going to see that I'm getting better and better and better. But there are these days you start off and you say, this was a really hard day. And Yeah. So it is that spiral, you know, the wave that it is ever onward, but it's not constantly upward. And I like that some days you had many one little thing, just one little thing for the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you hold on to those little things because there's other days. I mean, and I know, you know, people who are listening who've lost loved ones, and you know as well, there's days where you feel like you're kind of holding yourself together, and if you move the wrong way, you might just fall apart completely. And so...
In fact, I'm going to interrupt you here, and I might embarrass you because you have this beautiful, flowing, wise, insightful writing, and then I'm going to read one paragraph from your book because it just hit me. You write, "May is a freaking long month. I'm not sure I will make it, so I'm just going to fake it till I make it. I'm going to keep writing about resilience and courage and all that other crap until I start to believe it again." Oh, that is so authentic, so honest. And then there are the pages where you have no doubt it's making a difference. Tell us how the difference between being in a state of gratitude and feeling, Stephen, and when you would drop into the negativity.
So, and this is actually interesting. When I am in a state of gratitude, when I go out in the morning and I'm looking up and I'm listening to the birds and I'm watching the sun come up over the trees and I'm giving thanks, I feel Stephen all around me, and it's just such a beautiful feeling. When I am focused on the negative, like if you're spending too much time watching news, or if you get caught up in, you know, some drama, some friends are more dramatic than others and they like to, you know, kind of talk or whatever. If I get sucked into that kind of stuff, I don't feel Stephen around me. So for me, that's a no-brainer. You know, I have to stay in a space where I can feel him because he's my boy.
Yeah,
I want to feel him around me. I want to feel that, and I want to feel good. I want to feel good myself because that's how I can help others. So it is about making conscious choices about what you let into your life. I've certainly become. And not in a negative or mean way, but, you know, I wish people well. Everybody can live their own way. But for me, I choose to live kind of a quiet, introspective life because that means I get to have him around me and feel him. And it's just wonderful.
And this is what I teach people who want to connect with their own loved ones, that you have to raise your vibe. And gratitude is the fastest way to get there. But I want to make sure we make the point, Kelly, though, that it's not about pushing down your feelings and acting happy. Would you address that?
Well, you know, finding gratitude every day is not going to change the pain of your loss. I was finding gratitude every day, and I still went to grief counseling for a year because all those emotions were still there. All that pain was still there. We still had to process all that stuff as a family. There was still a lot of messiness. So I write about some of the messiness in the book, but, you know, it was still there. So it helps. You know, it can't change the pain of your loss, but what I will say is it did alleviate some of the suffering. Mm. So for me, that's what gratitude will do. But anybody, I would say that would be a falsehood to say that, you know, gratitude is going to make you feel better about everything. That's just not true. It's just not, because you have to feel the pain. You have to feel it because the pain is connected to the love. And
you actually wrote in the book, you're thankful for the hurt.
Yeah.
Why?
Because because it showed me how lucky I was, and it made me look at my own life a lot differently. It gave me an opportunity to use this chapter of my life a lot differently. I wouldn't wish what happened to our family on anybody.
Right.
But I am really proud of what we did with our pain. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah. You put these words in your book that you were actually talking about sitting in your therapist's waiting room and hearing a woman go on and on and shouting for an hour about all the negative things in her life. And the word you used was you reframed your pain, reframed it.
Yeah.
It's all about the point of view.
It is. You know, there's everything. I would suspect July 2nd, 2009, what I would call painful versus what I call what painful July 5th, 2009 would be two very different things.
Yeah.
And so now I think with some space between that fresh grief, now that I would probably be able to look at that woman with a little more understanding. I remember that moment. I remember listening to her and just thinking, wow, honestly, you know, that's what you're going to use this hour for. But you know, it takes moments like these to really ground you to what matters.
Yeah. And appreciating every moment, looking for those things. So give our listeners the basics of the JOLT method, just one little thing, and if there are actual steps they can take to begin to change their lives using the principles.
So just one little thing. For changing your own life, I usually, in the morning and the evening, I try to write it down, because there's something about, and I actually use a pen and paper, and I know that's probably going the way I find writing things makes it very real for me. And I like to write in a notebook what I'm thankful for. But what that does is you start looking for those one little thing. So give yourself a month, and you will find you wake in the morning looking for one little thing. You lay your head on the pillow and you start reflecting on your day, thinking about one little thing. And you're not thinking about what went wrong, or you're not thinking about the pain. And you will think about things that hurt. That's, you know, as I said, it's not going to take that away. But you will also notice that there still is goodness around you, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that would be the thing for the individual. But one of the things that I, as the years went by, I see for just one little thing is doing just one little thing for another person.
Oh, I love that.
You know, there's so much pain right now in this world. There's so many people who are suffering. And the best way for you to gain perspective on your own pain is to help someone else through theirs. So, you know, I actually would like to see JOLT, you know, as more of an action, and, you know, JOLT someone's life. So find your daily JOLT, but also JOLT someone's life, because there's no better way for you to find joy in your own life and find healing in your own life by helping someone through their dark days.
That is perfect, because you go from, it's one thing to be introspective and reflective on what you're grateful for, but then I love that you've turned it into a verb, jolt someone. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm going to start.
Yeah.
With intention that it be that one thing. We try to do it all the time, but to do that one specific thing and to write it down and to have, you know, 30 of those and then 365 of those and to be able to see the effect that we all can have on each other. All right, everybody, you got a challenge. Are you up to it? Beautiful, beautiful. So in the book, you wrote about how you used to love to sing. And then you said in there, I didn't know if I'd ever sing again. And you left us hanging. So with just a few minutes left, I want to know, have you sung again?
I didn't sing for a number of years. I didn't pick up my guitar. I didn't sing. And my youngest son had hip surgery because he's a hockey goalie as well. And hockey goalies have trouble with their hips. And he was teaching himself how to play guitar during his recovery. And he asked me to play with him. And when your son asks you to play, you play. Mm-hmm. And so I played with him and I sang with him and it was lovely. I still struggle with it sometimes because I used to sing to Stephen and to Brendan as babies. I used to sit with my guitar and sing to them. And so it's still a bit of a struggle, but you can't let the music, die. You have to keep it in your life because I'm still here.
Yeah. So Jolt, you make it clear, just one little thing, is not just a process for those who are processing grief. It's for anybody when they're in the midst of what you call turning points in life. So we have just 2 minutes to go. If you could choose just one thing you'd like everybody to know when they're in the midst of one of those turning points, what would it be?
It's that I think it's that you are stronger than you think, and that you don't have to find a solution all at once. You don't, this is not going to be perfect. It's going to be messy, but one little thing at a time, you can find your way back to the light. And you're not alone. I think if there's one thing I can say, you are not alone. And my website, contact me. You're not alone, ever.
And that's kellybuckley.com. And the Facebook page, how do they find that?
Just facebook.com/ just one little thing.
Easy enough. Yeah. Yes. And join this huge community of people that even though they're hurting like all of us do, because that is life, there is still joy to be found. And your beautiful book, Just One Little Thing, has shown us that. And the Facebook page just keeps those ripples going. So, Kelly, thank you so much for sharing with us today and every day.
Oh, thank you so much for chatting with me about this. It's been such a pleasure.
It's been our pleasure. Everybody go out and have a great week, okay? I love you all. We'll see you back here next week.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Victoria Moran. Since we launched the Main Street Vegan podcast back in 2012, lots more people have discovered the way that moving in a vegan direction can infuse our lives with vitality, spirituality, and compassion. My guests are experts on every aspect of making this work in your real life and our real world. Join us for Main Street Vegan here on mindbodyspirit.fm.